In God Snake, there's some wonderful images that you create. There's the one that comes to mind that was the feathers from the crow, the three feathers. I can picture them as they hit the snow or the ice and freezing and sitting there like little black spots down there. That's the kind of thing that goes all through the book, which is done very well. And of course, the characters are very vivid to me. The stern-willed father and Anna, who is stern-willed herself in a way, a willful little girl. Tell me about God's Snake and how this book came about.
There are autobiographical elements in the book. And years ago, maybe 10, 12 years ago, I had tried writing a book dealing with this subject matter. And it was done in a chronological way, you know. So-and-so was born, and then this happened, and then that happened. And it seemed tedious to me that although some of the events were interesting events, but I thought, what is the point of doing this? You know, and who's interested in my life, really? So later, and I let it go. I wrote the first two or three chapters. But the book was gnawing at me. It was like I had to get it out of my system. I had to write this book. I think what I thought was that it would be possible to skip that first book, which with most writers is autobiographical, and I thought it might be possible to not do that, but it wasn't, because everything else that I was trying to write, some of the things that I'm dealing with this book would obtrude. Is that the right word?
Intrude.
Mm-hmm. Right. In the material, and they had no place there. So I knew that I had to deal with this subject matter and get it out of the way almost. But I didn't want it to make it an autobiographical book in the strict sense that I would tell my story. So I thought to myself, why am I compelled by this material? Why is it important? Why is it haunting me? And instead of approaching it by the events, I approached it with the meaning of the events. What am I making any sense so far?
You are,
okay.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, or the effect that they had on me, those events. And then I started feeling some distance from the material. It became more abstract. I started taking notes about the child, Anna. And although I was using some things that had really happened, they were in the third person. I found that was not a willful decision. It came naturally that way. So I would say, she thinks, she feels. And when I wrote it in the first person, I almost did it the way an actress would do it. You know, I would pretend to myself that I was Anna now. I was this child now. And I was going through these things, that some of which had actually happened to me, some of which had not. And try to live those events. So it was not an act of memory, really. It was not, and in that sense, the book is not a memoir.
But writing in the first person makes it difficult to distance yourself from the character to a degree that you might have to if you were going to include more fictional elements. Isn't that true?
No, because once I suspended disbelief, as I said, I was taking all my notes from the third person and putting them in the first person. I believed that I was Anna writing the book, not myself writing about my childhood. And I wanted to write in the first person because I thought that it would have a greater immediacy. Even for me, writing it, I wanted to have a strong emotional impact. And I thought I would achieve it better in the first person.
Well, the most vivid character in the book is Anna's father. Was your father like that?
He was, yes.
There
are changes, of course, you know, but yes, the basic elements in the character are true.
There's that one brutal chapter which was very disturbing, and that was the beating of the dog, and then putting the dog in the, I guess, in the wood
house. In a wood house.
I didn't remember.
Well, no, that was, there had been a dog that my father shot, but not, you know, so I took that incident and made it into the chapter Bitch.
There are obviously parallels in your early life with God's snake, but tell me, let's talk a little bit about you and what life was like as you were growing up. It was apparently, you were born about 1946.
Six.
So this is right after the war, a time when Greece was going through a great deal of trauma. So those early years, what were they like for you?
They were very hard. Greece was also very poor at the time. We had to, my father was stationed mostly in Macedonia in very small towns. There were villages, rather. There was no electricity. There was no running water. The conditions were very rough. The people were, it was a desolate feeling about the place. You know, a civil war, there can't be anything
It should be
more
noted
tragic
that you were what Americans call an army brat.
Right.
So you moved around a
I moved
lot.
Around a lot till I was 13. And then my father, either that year or shortly afterward, I don't remember anymore, left the army. And we settled in Athens. Mm-hmm. And I went to school there. But till then, I must have gone to at least 10 schools. At least once a year, we'd go to a new place. And sometimes in the middle of the year, we'd have to move, so... That was hard.
How old were you when you left Greece?
18.
Did you come to the United States to study?
Yes, I did. I went to Sarah Lawrence.
Uh-huh. What did you study at Sarah Lawrence? English?
Theater. No, it was my first interest, and I had wanted to be a playwright. That was my first ambition, and I haven't given up on it entirely.
Oh, of course you have. Well, in God's Snake, Anna makes repeated references to wanting to be a writer, so I have a feeling that may have also been in your young blood.
When I was very young, when I was about 10, I wrote poetry, and I had one poem published that I mailed myself, my own, to this magazine. And then my second poem was rejected, and it was heartbreaking. But also I experienced it as a great humiliation. And I never sent another poem out. I continued writing them. I must have written that year about 10 or 15 poems. But I got no encouragement at all at home. My father thought that writing poetry was a sign or symptom of a morbid sensitivity. So although he never actually said, don't do this, it was he didn't want to listen when I read them to him. And I think... probably that was one of the reasons that I gave up. Maybe because, we all want our parents' approval, and especially at that age. So I didn't want to do something that I thought made me a sissy in his eyes. So.
Well, his attitude is probably not unusual for a military person.
No.
So, this we can criticize the attitude, but... At the same time, it's not unusual. And in fact, my father never encouraged me in any artistic pursuits to speak of, mm-hmm. but he never discouraged me either. It was, I think he always thought, well, I'd like for my son to be a businessman like I am, work for Exxon or Mobil or something like that. In a way, they're not that far apart.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do when you got out of Sarah Lawrence?
I went on to graduate school. I went to Columbia, and I got an MFA in creative writing.
Then what happened?
Well, then I had a job. I worked at the William Morrow Company as a copy editor. And at the same time, I was moonlighting in Newsweek as a proofreader. I would work full-time, you know, Monday through Friday. And then Friday night from 7 at night till 5 in the morning, and Saturday from 6 at night till 2 in the morning. I did that for about a year. And then I continued... doing freelance proofreading and working part-time at Newsweek and continuing to write.
You mentioned a moment ago that you stopped writing poetry because you felt that your father didn't give you sufficient encouragement. But the fact of the matter is, nobody gives anybody encouragement to speak of. So when you began writing, did you have people saying, Irene,
Not while I was in Greece, no. No, that didn't happen, with the exception of the one poem that got published that I told you about when I was ten. But when I came here at Sarah Lawrence, I started writing poetry again, and I started doing it in English. But two things. One was that both my accent and my intonation were much worse than what they are now. And it was free verse I was writing, and if I read it, people could see the intended rhythms. But if somebody else read it and pronounced it the way, you know, they would normally pronounce it, it didn't work. But worse than that, I realized that my knowledge of the language was entirely cerebral at that point. And you cannot write poetry unless you have an instinctive knowledge of the language. If you dream, you have to be able to dream it, not be able to, but naturally dream in it and be able to curse in it and otherwise. So that was discouraging. But soon after that, I wrote a story. And I felt that that worked. I felt that if I can speak, I can write fiction. That it did not involve quite the same thing. And I showed that story to Grace Paley, who was teaching at Sarah Lawrence at the time, and she loved it. And that was, yes, that was my first real encouragement. And but also, when I wrote that story, in myself, I knew that that was it, that I was a writer, that I might not be able to be a poet in this language, but that I could certainly be able to write. And well, I went on from there.
When you were 18 and you came here, you did speak some English, because you had studied some Greece, right?
Yes, I did. But it was a very good reading knowledge of it. I did not really speak it, not very well anyway.
Did you have relatives here when you came, when you first came at the age of 18?
I did have some, but I was not in touch with them, so I really came on my own.
Well, that must have been
I
tough,
didn't see
18
them.
Years old and coming to a strange land, a strange school.
Now I realize that it's tough, and it was sort of a very foolhardy thing to do, but at the time, I thought it was the most natural thing in the world. I wanted to be on my own. I had the spirit of adventure. I had absolutely no fear. But as I said, that was being foolhardy.
How did you find Sarah Lawrence?
Well, I was, I think, Sarah, at the time, you know, in 1964 when I came, the cultural difference between Greece and the States was immense. I think a young woman coming to the States now would not have the same problem of adjusting to the culture, because Europe and Greece are so Americanized that, you know, it's not like going to a very strange country. But for me, I could have gone to Mars, it seemed. And Sarah Lawrence at the time was a strange school. I would think that American students from the Midwest, for example, might be shocked by being in that environment, and I was doubly shocked.
Shocked? What's shocking about Sarah Lawrence?
Well, it was a very progressive school. I was accustomed to a very sort of strict academic discipline. In my school, we wore uniforms. We had to have our hair a certain way, and we had to study certain subjects. And
well, that shouldn't have been hard for you. You grew up in a military family.
No, I'm saying, yes, in school. So I could go from that to a school that was totally free.
But you adjusted all right, though.
It was hard. It was really hard. The first 2 years were horrible, actually. Yeah, I was very lonely. Also, in Greece, I felt I'd been at the top of my class. I felt very capable. I knew what I could do, and I could do it. And all of a sudden, I was in an environment where I had to this great disadvantage of not speaking the language as well as others, and not being able to distinguish myself. And I had been accustomed to being able to distinguish myself. So. But it was probably, I'm sure it was very good for me to somehow find myself.
Well, it's obvious that you have a full command of the language in God's snake. I mean, it's one would not know that you came here in 1964 with a slight burden, mm-hmm. a slight language handicap. It reads perfectly well. So you're very confident in terms of using the English language for your writing now.
At this point, I am. Because I'm not afraid anymore to make mistakes in the language. I'm not. I've accepted that it may have some sort of an idiosyncratic tone, mm-hmm. and that's okay. It's like my accent. You know, I don't feel self-conscious about it anymore. But for many years, I thought I had to be correct, and that made me very self-conscious. It was very constrictive.
Is Godsnake going to be published in Greece?
I don't know yet. It may. That's a little problematic because I would like to translate it myself, and yet that would take a long time. And now I feel I have such momentum in my work, and I want to go on with my second book. I don't want to take the time out now to translate it. And yet I would feel strange if somebody else translated it. So I don't know.
I can understand why you would feel that way, because somebody's taking your work and interpreting it in a certain way that may not jive with exactly what you meant.
And especially in my own language. I mean, it would be different if somebody did it in Japanese or, you know, where you want to know what they've done.
But have you made peace with your family?
They love the book. Yes, yes. And they've seen the book and they love it. They're very excited by it.
They read in English?
They do read in English. They had some difficulty with it. They don't speak it that well. So they said that they had to read it with the dictionary, and it was sort of hard going because of that. But they've read it.
You seem to have a certain obsession with animals. We have in the book there's a wolf, there's a crow and a deer and a German shepherd and, of course, snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Animals, I guess for most children, animals are a very important part of their lives.
And exactly.
They must have had a big impact on you.
I guess they did, but I think that it's true with most children. I think they take animals seriously as part of the world. I don't think they condescend to them, and they do not sentimentalize them as people do later in life. You know, they're something alive, and they're like they are. So.
Well, Anna in Godsnake, of course, is fascinated by the snakes that she sees. Tell me the significance of Godsnake. What is Godsnake?
Well, the idea came to me when I was from an experience I had when I was 26, I think, and I was back in Greece, and I was in a farm, and I saw a snake that must have been a variety of king snake. Is that what it's called? Or king's snake?
Okay. I'm not.
You're not
from
that. It was by a cistern, and it was totally repulsive to me, and I was frightened. It must have been a couple of yards long. But the farmer reassured me and said, don't be frightened. This is a good snake. Of course, by good, he meant non-poisonous. But there was something in the way that he said good. It was as though he implied some sort of moral quality. And the idea of a good snake was very appealing to me. That was the genesis of the title and the first chapter.
So a good snake is God's snake.
Well, that's something I made up for the story. Mm-hmm. That the as you saw, Anna sees it's a similar scene on a cistern, this ugly snake, and calls on her father's orderly to kill it, and he doesn't, and tells her that it's God's snake. But that's made up. There's no, people have asked me if there's such a thing in Greece, there's such a legend, but it's not true.
Well, Godsnake is your first book. What did it feel like when this book first appeared and you picked it up and saw your name on it? What was that experience like for you?
Oddly, I was numb. It wasn't even exciting. I was in shock. This is the book. It took me a long time to really feel the excitement.
Of course, you had been living and working with the book for so long that, in a way, when the book finally came out, it was almost an anticlimax, wasn't it?
That may have been part of it, but I also think the fact that I'm older, I'm 40 years old, and if this had happened when I was, let's say, 20, 22, 23, I think my reaction would have been very different.
Well, when my first book comes out, it's not going to be, I'm going to be as excited as I was when I was 26.
Yes.
You mentioned that you have a momentum, and so obviously you're writing now. What themes are you exploring as you continue your writing?
My second book is entitled Fear, and I guess that's the theme. It's it takes place in Thessaloniki. That's the second largest city in Greece, in northern Greece. And in 1958, I think that was the year, there was a mass killer in the city. This happened, in fact. And he killed, I forget how many people that year, maybe 7 or 9. Initially, there were couples, and then there were single women. The city was terrorized by this. And after the, let's say, fourth murder, they called in the National Guard, and the National Guard was patrolling the streets at night. And also there was a self-imposed curfew so that late at night the streets would be deserted. And it was as though the city was under occupation somehow, and it was this one man causing it. The people started calling him the Dragon. And I think in their imagination he must have really taken hold as something, and someone not just monstrous but almost supernatural. Once we were in church on a Sunday, and some plaster fell from the ceiling, and people panicked, and they were trying to get out of the church, and they started calling, "The Dragon, the Dragon." Okay, so I'm not even, actually, none of this is going to appear in the book, but, and I'm not going to do research on the actual killer, but I'm using it as the background of the story. And it sets off the atmosphere of the book.
The fear and hysteria.
And yes, the fear. And also, you know, it's also something mysterious, you know, evil, you know, that takes over in the city and transforms it for a whole year. But the fear that interests me is fear of love, fear of happiness, fear of life, fear of freedom. Protagonist is Anna again, except that the book is going to be in the third person and it will be totally independent. It's not exactly a sequel. I think people who have read Godsnake will be more interested to read, you know, this book.
Will I recognize Anna as Anna?
Yes, except that you will now see her from the outside. It's not her voice anymore. And the other main characters, the father, the mother, again, they're seen from the outside. So it is the story of her coming to adolescence, her 13th year.
I liked the way you pictured Anna and did not make her a fully heroic character, and that she was a flawed child.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the relationship with the maternal grandmother, her
mm-hmm.
grandfather, and,
yeah.
Where he tried to reach out to love her, and she rebuffed him for no explicable reason. And the episode about the deer, she really played the biggest part in allowing the deer to die, just a willful. The reason I thought it was good to show this is that all people are flawed characters. When I read a book, usually a thriller, about someone who has no flaws and is fully heroic,
yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
I agree.
Well, I didn't mean it.
Or totally evil, for that matter. You know, people who do that.
Yeah, that's right. Even yeah. Hitler liked little children. And dogs. Yeah. And Eva Braun. Mm. Irene Spanadu, this was a wonderful debut, and I love the book, and I congratulate you on it. I certainly am going to look forward to seeing what comes next, and I want to thank